Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Valentine McGillicuddy believed in the equality of all people. For today's Images of the Past, we welcome Gary Enright, director of the 1881 Courthouse Museum in Custer, with more on that story. Gary, welcome back. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Lori. I appreciate it. And what an interesting subject we have today.
Now, this is one of those men, I've heard his name and I know nothing about him. So, you get to tell us the story.
Well, we start out in 1849 when he was born. He was a native of Racine, Wisconsin. But he spent most of his adult life in the American West and a good deal of it right in our territory of what we called Dakota Territory back in that day. He was a physician. And oddly enough, a very bright man. He graduated from Detroit Medical School at the age of 20.
And he was
a bright guy. And one of the things that he did right off the bat was that he got a job with the government. He actually went to the northern part of the Dakota Territory and helped survey the borderline between the United States and Canada. And that was his first exposure out here. And they used his talents and his training as a physician to help provide medical aid to any of the people who were working in that particular area. But it was kind of interesting. That's how he started out. He didn't really start out as a doctor. He did that all of his life, except that he had about four or five other careers, right, in tied all into one.
Interesting. So, and how does he sort of, you know, find a permanent space here? How long is he here, and what's his role then?
Well, in 1875, which would have made him about 30 years old, he joined the Jenny Party, which was one of the military parties, the expeditions that came into the Black Hills. They followed on the footsteps of General Custer, who came in 1874. And then the Newton-Jenny Party came in from Wyoming, and they also did almost the same thing. They surveyed the Black Hills. They sort of set up a presence here, a military presence. And he was with that party. And one of the things that fascinated him when he was here was what we called at that time Harney Peak, which is has now had its names changed, and so that to more reflect the Native American influence in our part of the country. Anyway, he thought so much of Harney Peak, and he was so impressed with it that he made a note that followed him the rest of his life, that if I should ever die, I want to have my body cremated and I want the ashes to be dumped at Harney Peak.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and it was kind of a permanent tie to the Black Hills. But the man spent most of his adult life right here in the middle of the Black Hills and on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation.
You say he is a humanist.
Yes,
what do you mean by that, and how do we know?
Well, I think it was the reflection of the Native people themselves, particularly the leader, Red Cloud, who was the chief at the time on the Pine Ridge. And he actually called McGillicuddy Washichu Wakan, which really means holy white man. They didn't give that designation of having any kind of spiritual powers to the white people very often. And they did to McGillicuddy because of his genuine compassion for the Native American people. The guy was truly a hero of the Native Americans. They thought he was something very special.
Right. And that's does he stand out in that way because he is unusual in that regard, or are there specific things that he does that, form that connection?
Well, basically, I think it was just because of his personality and his genuinely concerned for what was happening to the Native American people and how they were losing their history, so to speak, and being forced to a new lifestyle. And he was very compassionate about that. He felt that there needed to be some extra attention paid and strong representation in their behalf, particularly in Washington, D.C. So he was an advocate for Native American people, and they knew it, and they felt very strongly about that.
And he has some connection with Crazy Horse. Tell me that story.
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, Crazy Horse was one of the warriors that existed in that part of the country at the time. And when he was stabbed in an attempt on his life, McGillicuddy, Dr. McGillicuddy, was the one who treated Crazy Horse and kept him alive for quite some time until, and actually was by his bedside when he died, and saw to it that his body was turned over to the Native Americans, and that he resisted the Fort Robinson commander at the time, who wanted to take Crazy Horse and put him into a dormitory, so to speak, without any special attention to heal up his wounds. And McGillicuddy fought him on that. He fought the commander, and he said, no, you will leave him in the hospital. And that's how it happened, that he then took Crazy Horse's body and turned it over to the Native Americans, who secretly took the body out, and nobody to this day knows where he's buried.
So the doctor had some influence with everyone, really, if he was listened to and was able to take that stand without... Yes. Did he have personal consequences for that at all?
Not necessarily, because following that time as the Indian agent on the Pine Ridge, which he serves for several years, a half a decade or more, he then joined back with the military. And after the Newton-Jenny party, he then joined... the subject that we had on last week, who was George Crook. He enjoyed a time with General Crook, and he traveled with him. He was there when Little Big Horn took place. He was there during all of General Crook's battles, the Rosebud River battle up there, and then eventually the Slim Butte battle in South Dakota, or the Dakota Territory, and then he was also there for most of the, what they call the Horse Meat March, if you remember me talking about them butchering their horses. The McGillicuddy was right in the middle of all of that. And it was,
interesting. What?
Go ahead.
What did he leave behind, you know, to tell us about his perspective on any of that? Did he leave behind a series of journals? How do we have the information about him that we have today?
Well, yes, there was quite a bit written by him in longhand. He didn't publish any books or anything of the sort, but he did leave some materials written, oddly enough, on the United States Indian Service letterhead. And he actually did this while he was at Pine Ridge. But he never had it published, and he didn't, as far as we know, go for any really public relations program. But he did so much else, because he actually left the Native American influence and moved into Rapid City, South Dakota, and where he became an iconic character in the history of Rapid City.
Really? How so?
Well, he started out in the town as a doctor, and he settled in Rapid City. Soon he became the president of a newly formed bank called the Lakota Bank. That was part of his legacy to Rapid City. And then he was so interested in the development and the furtherance of the existence of the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology that he devoted so much time to that particular entity that they named him as dean and of the School of Mines. He was actually the president of the School of Mines. And then... he still kept his his medical practice going, and the state of South Dakota actually appointed him as the first Surgeon General of the state of South Dakota. And then he built a mansion in Rapid City, which, if you've paid attention to some of the news reports lately, there was a newspaper article the other day about the restoration of the outside of the McGillicuddy Mansion in Rapid City that was built in 1888, and it's still there, and it's going to be a historical place for forever.
Wow. Gary Enright, director of the 1881 Courthouse Museum, it is always a delight. This is quite a fascinating story. Thank you so much for being here, as always.
Full of good history, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah.